but we're going to end on a high today, too. Look at all you guys stayed through the whole thing. Yay. Is that funny? Okay. All right. So, commissioning. You might not have any idea, what is she going to talk about with this? Well, I'm going to show you. But first, who here has ever been commissioned? Raise your hand real quick. Have you ever been like the thing where they like, you know, send you out, pray over you, all that kind of, okay, good, great. All right. And now, who here has ever participated in a service or where you were in a group, you were sending someone else out? Who has ever commissioned someone else? All right. So we're all both, okay. So I want you to think about it then from any perspective that you've been in, whether you were the one being commissioned or part of the group commissioning someone else, in your mind, was there any implied promise, authority, expectation, or commitment associated with that act of commissioning? Who says yes? There was an implication, there was a promise that went along with that. Oh, okay, about maybe 50%, okay? For the other half, I guess it was just a nice day, right? Okay, sure, great. Okay, well, in this session, we're going to answer two questions about commissioning. First of all, we need to be clear on what is being promised when someone is sent out into cross-cultural ministry. And second of all, we want to examine the potential to harness that act of commissioning in order to fill some gaps that might otherwise go unaddressed in the lives of the M's we sent. Now, I'm not going to suggest that each of us, whenever our church or ministry commissions someone, that we should automatically take personal responsibility to directly fill the promise and the potential for that person we're sending out. But my hope is that we will become clear on the promises and the potential opportunities, and that we will take responsibility to ensure there's an answer to this question. If not you, then who? Okay? That makes no sense right now, but it will. So, what is being promised by the act of commissioning someone into ministry? Many times it's not made clear, and so a lot of M's experience the out of sight, out of mind partnerships with their sending churches. Some aren't bothered by this, which isn't necessarily a good sign. Others deeply struggle with this. I've had both types of commissioning experiences being sent out. Back in 2007, when I first went overseas, I was a newer member of a large church. And though they were willing to send me, no one seemed too concerned about evaluating me or getting to know me or discussing plans for any further contact in the future. On my last Sunday at the church before moving to Asia, they called me to the front of the church and invited people to come up and pray for me as they sent me out. Now, I'm not saying this is objectively true, but in my memory of the day, it was awkwardly quiet. And then only a couple people, like pity, came up to pray for me, while most seemed like they were whispering, like, who's that? And I never heard from any of them ever again. This is a very common experience for M's. They go overseas and feel forgotten by the ones who sent them. This type of experience makes commissioning seem pretty meaningless and empty. But commissioning can be so much more. According to the Global Missions Toolbox, every commissioning service should aim to do four things: affirm their calling, cement the commitment to a partnership, worship together, and say goodbye well. And according to the disappointed expectations of M's that I've worked with on the field, the implied promises of commissioning fall into these six categories: authority to affirm that person's qualifications and calling into that new ministry role, commitment to partner with them in their ministry in a variety of ways, a sincere desire to hear their reports about ministry whenever they come back and visit, commitment to read their newsletters. They think that's what's being offered, so yeah. To be a source of help If they're ever struggling personally on the field or facing conflicts with other M's or need other types of support. And most importantly, to not forget about them. This is a common fear and struggle that M's face of being forgotten and left behind, becoming like an abandoned sheep without any shepherd who's taken responsibility to look after them. Addressing these promises of commissioning, this is pretty easy to do. We can solve this problem, all right? As a sending group, all we have to do is decide what commitments and promises are represented by that commissioning, say it clearly to the M, and then ensure those promises are kept by identifying exactly who will monitor, oversee, and carry them out. Straightforward. So let's get into now the picture of the potential of commissioning. I mentioned earlier that I've experienced both good and bad versions of the commissioning partnership. So after that awkward ceremony with the big church back in 2007 and a couple years on the field, I knew how important it was going to be for me to develop a meaningful connection with a sending church before really committing myself to long-term ministry overseas. So when I was back in the States working on my master's, I intentionally found a pretty new and small church plant. And right away, I met with the pastor and leaders and shared my desire to cultivate a meaningful partnership with a church that wanted to share ownership of the ministry that I would be involved with and take responsibility to shepherd me while I was out there caring for others all around Asia. And over the years, that partnership lived up to all the promises and hopes we had expressed to each other. I'm talking about a huge care package full of homemade granola and like somebody put like healthy green stirred in the drink mix thing because they were like concerned about my nutrition. I mean, handmade cards from the children and just real sweet reminders that I wasn't forgotten. And there came a time later on when I went through a season of struggling on the field. And I needed to lean on that body of believers for support. I remember going on furlough and meeting with the pastors and telling them about my struggles and my thoughts of leaving the field. They didn't give quick, easy advice. They really wrestled through the challenges with me, asked tough questions, and encouraged me to question some assumptions I was making. Because of their relationship with me and their promise to shepherd me through that hard season, I returned to the field with an agreed plan to give it 6 more months and see what God would do. And during that time, we got to celebrate so many ways that God opened new doors and completely changed my heart and the entire course of my ministry. That was my experience because of the support they had promised to provide, and then I was able to take them up on it. Now, maybe not every sending group is willing or able to directly offer that type of relationship with those they send, and that's okay. But if not you, then who is going to fill that critical role for each M that is sent? Okay, so I've thought about this, and here are the 3 broad needs that M's have that commissioning groups have the potential to address: emotional and spiritual support and decommissioning. Sorry, I keep clicking on myself. Now, I don't mean, when I'm talking about support, I don't mean responsive support like counseling, member care, or praying with them when they send prayer requests. We can go on. Okay, there we go. What I'm talking about here with support, I'm talking about a lifestyle of closeness that allows you to provide ongoing support and also monitor how the M is doing during the ups and downs of life on the field. Okay, here's a little data for you. In 2020, the Barna Group conducted surveys highlighting the expressed needs of different generational groups during the early months of COVID. And I think this is relevant because I see a lot of overlap between what Americans experienced during 2020 and what many M's experience during their lives on the field. So even in their home culture, after only a couple months of social restrictions, a significant portion of each generation reported that they needed emotional support. And when they were asked to reflect on the past week, just the past week, 1 in 5 millennials said they feel lonely all the time. That's here in America. And another 25% said they feel lonely at least some of each day. Overall, big portions of all generations reported feeling lonely at least once, every day, or all of the time, just during the past week. So if we're looking at some differences in the types of support different generations of M's might also need on the field, expect younger generations to have a progressively greater need for emotional support and face greater struggles with loneliness. Okay, let's look at spiritual needs revealed by these surveys. Over half of Christians believe that their spiritual life is entirely private. So how do you think that belief probably impacts spiritual growth? If Christians do not invite the body of Christ to engage them with accountability, correction, admonishment, and oversight with spiritual authority, which are all commands that God has given for believers to do for each other, then how is it going to happen? I am suggesting that even M's need a lifestyle of spiritual oversight, guidance, and help to keep them from going off the rails. Not just support once they're off the rails. So in the Peace Pursuit Ministry, an M in conflict once assured us of his willingness to submit, stating, "I do submit to my team leader. Every time I agree, I submit." Okay. So I'm associating spiritual support with discipleship, defined as a relational investment in spiritual growth. And more than 1 in 3 Christians report they are not involved in this in any form, either helping others grow or receiving investment in their own growth. M's do a lot of discipling of others, but it's very rare to find M's who have anyone discipling them. Now, here's where spiritual support and generational distinctions coincide. A person's belief that their spiritual life is entirely private is negatively correlated with their intentional engagement in discipleship relationships and directly corresponds with generational groups. So maybe that just sounded like a bunch of blah, 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 blah statistics stuff. But here's what that means. So if we're looking at opposite ends of the generational spectrum, 63% of boomers at the top end, are most likely to believe spirituality is entirely private and are least likely to be in a discipleship community. And at the opposite end, at 46%, Gen Z is least likely to believe spirituality is private and are twice as likely as boomers to be in a discipleship community. So the younger a generation is, the more they desire and expect relational investments in their spiritual growth. And I see the effects of this on the field because it is almost entirely the M's in their 20s who are coming to me now who are most frequently seeking help with their painful disappointments about the relationships they found on the field, which seem to them to lack the deep, discipling, supportive closeness and mentorship they expected from the other older M's. They want someone to shepherd their soul, but can't seem to find willing shepherds. So the potential that accompanies the act of commissioning is to ensure that someone is shepherding their soul. But if the body of believers who commission someone into ministry doesn't develop an intentional ongoing plan to shepherd the soul of that person, then who will? Many churches presume that the team on the field will provide personal and spiritual care for one another and that they'll automatically keep growing in their faith and holiness. It's a widespread presumption that M's are mature believers and therefore do not need someone to exercise spiritual authority in their lives. Sadly, I have met many M's who also believe this. These assumptions are probably reinforced by the stories M's choose to share about their lives and ministries. M's can feel the need to maintain a certain facade of holiness and worthiness and commitment in the eyes of the people who are supporting them. This is probably for two reasons. First, M's who are aware of their struggles might be reluctant to self-report it for fear of the consequences. But also, people in general don't recognize their own flaws, shortcomings, and areas that need growth until someone loves them enough to show them. And who will do that for M's on the field? Because of my role on the field, I basically always had my member care hat on. I was playing my role. I was there for you. I'm there for you. I'm member care. All right. So whenever I was around M's, that's how they saw me, and that's what I was focused on. I was there to support them, care for them. So who had the opportunity to see me at my worst and speak into my areas for needed support and growth? I'll tell you who. It was often strangers working at airports who got to witness me at my worst. I'm not going to go beyond that. Many M's in leadership roles lack context that would give others the knowledge and opportunity to speak truth to them, to sharpen them, and help them grow in holiness. But for many years, I was an active participant in weekly small group with my sending church, like early Thursday mornings in Asia time. So even from Asia, I would FaceTime into my small group, and then with my small group, they don't even know what member care is. I didn't have a hat on with them. So they did have opportunities to observe me put my foot in my mouth and demonstrate sins that I wasn't seeing in myself. And I'm telling you, they did speak into my life in ways that no one else could. One of the most difficult times in M's life is their transition back to the States. I have heard so many people, so many times they've said to me, as soon as I left the field, it's like I disappeared. I lost my connection to the workers on the field, but I also lost my place in the church. There was no acknowledgement of what those years had meant. It was just abruptly over. Decommissioning ceremonies for battleships honor the legacy of the lives, the values, and the nation that were defended by that ship over the years of its service. I read about one naval ceremony where they formally complained, "Today's decommissioning ceremony is a solemn occasion on which we honor the men and women who have given their time, their energy, their talents, and for some, their very lives, to fulfill and surpass the hopes and dreams of those who stood at the commissioning ceremony." I find that beautiful and kind of sad, but somehow reminiscent of what we all hope to hear someday when our years of service fully come to an end. Well done, faithful servant. So beginnings are important, we know that, but endings are also very important. We need to acknowledge and celebrate beginnings and endings. We gather for weddings and funerals. We have graduation ceremonies. We commission the M's, but we also need to decommission them. Supportive gestures along the way are often forgotten in the final memories of missional ministry, and the transition back home are experienced as painful and disappointing. This is called the recency effect. Okay? So if it feels like no one cares at the end, it's easy for M's to develop a narrative that no one ever cared, which can then override all the evidence to the contrary. If my sending church hadn't been so actively involved in my times of struggle and had it helped me so much in the last 2 years as I've transitioned off the field unexpectedly during COVID, I may have totally forgotten about the care packages and homemade cards they sent me along the way. We give commissioning certificates and pray over people as we send them out, but most M's have no similar acknowledgement when they come back home. We have the potential to combat this by walking just as closely with M's as we decommissioned them as we did when we commissioned them. I think that's for all of our good, all of our benefit. To sum up, there's a lot of expectations that can be unspoken between the senders and the ones being sent. When we commission brothers and sisters into ministry, Let's just clearly communicate what is being promised or implied, and then make sure those promises are kept. That part's, come on, we can do that. Come on, guys. We can do it. Now, as for the ways commissioning has the potential for greater impact in overlooked areas of M's lives, my question and my challenge is this. If not you, then who? Who is going to shepherd their soul, not just at the beginning or for the first year, but all the way to the end? Thank you. Thank you.